Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LeVernier. Stay tuned for an hour of romance. Later on, we hear Will Rogers Jr. in Rogers of the Gazette, but right now, the series romance with an all-star cast for the story The Long Way Home, from July 24th, 1954 on CBS.
Now, from Hollywood, romance. In a hot, sultry port on the west coast of India, 12 passengers wait to board a ship that will take them home. They are English, French, Dutch, and American. Men and women whose lives, for 3.5 years, have been encircled by the barbed wire of a Japanese prison camp. And now they are going home. With Ellen Morgan as Pamela and Hans Conried as Captain Arndal, we bring you transcribed Leonard St. Clair's dramatic new radio play, The Long Way Home. The thermometer in the embarkation room stood at 102. Cool for the port of Cochin on the Malabar coast of India. It was August the 7th, 1945. Hiroshima and the atomic bomb plus one day. August and the southwest monsoon. Outside it was raining, and inside, steaming bedlam. There were the British military, Indian porters, seamen and stevedores, International Red Cross agents, port officials and police, and the 12 passengers who were to go aboard the Nordfjord.
I thought I recognized you. You were on the same plane that flew us out from Singapore, weren't you?
Let me through, please. Let me through.
Move along there. Sure, the war's as good as over. Drop another atomic bomb and that'll be it. Show your papers.
Let me through, please.
It's such a short message. It's to the International Red Cross in Israel.
I'm sorry, madame. No wireless messages may be sent of a personal nature.
Well, surely they could make an exception if there are special circumstances and urgent reasons.
Madame, everyone in this room has an urgent reason. They are all special circumstances, or they wouldn't be here. Nothing can be done until we get new orders.
Major, if you please.
Ah, Captain Arndal, come for your sailing papers, I suppose.
I was told they'd be here at your desk.
Right, sir, as soon as I find them.
Major, if you can't send my message now, could you keep it here and send it when your orders change?
Aye, but who knows when that will be.
Oh, please, just on the chance.
All right, I'll file it. Ah, here we are, your papers, Captain.
Thank you.
And a safe voyage for you, sir.
Sailed at 1,400 hours. A captured German freighter with the name Nordfjord freshly painted on bow and stern. Home port, Oslo. A port which she'd never seen. An obedient captain and crew who had served out the war in the Pacific and Indian Oceans. And Wellington Island disappearing astern when we were in the open sea. The rain broke off. The sun came out just before it set.
Advance to full speed.
Advance to full speed, yes, sir.
A long voyage ahead, Mr. Orley.
A very long voyage, sir.
Across the Arabian Sea, the Gulf of Aden, up the Red Sea, Suez Canal, the Mediterranean, and home.
And home. Ah, very pretty, isn't she, sir?
Hmm?
The lady standing up there in the bow, Mrs. Bruner.
You know her?
No, sir. The steward told me her name, Pamela Bruner. English girl married to a German national.
Mm. Very pretty. Walks with a good deal of grace. Could be a dancer.
Oh, that's a good guess, sir. Steward saw her unpack her bags. There was a photo of her with some ballet troupe.
Mr. Orlick, you are going home, you know. You've got a girl.
It's been 5 years, sir. A lot could have happened.
A lot has happened, Mr. Orley. Too much. We were going home. And yet I could feel no excitement among my officers and crew. And at dinner that first evening, there were a few smiles among the passengers. Mr. Maxwell, the American, seemed the only one who cared to talk. And he addressed all his remarks to Mrs. Bruner. Apparently, they'd known each other in the Japanese prison camp. And before that, he had been a Singapore agent for an American oil company. After dinner, I returned to the bridge. About mid-evening, the radio officer phoned and asked me to come to the wireless room.
Sir, this lady insists that I radio a personal message for her.
I see. Mrs. Bruner, I believe I heard the embarkation officer in Cochin tell you that that could not be done.
But now we're at sea, Captain Ando. This is your ship. You're the only authority.
My authority is subject to the Army and Navy commands, madam. We are under radio silence.
Well, if you'll let me explain why...
I'm very sorry.
I went out to Singapore with a ballet company from Europe. My husband was in Vienna, but he was going to join me. And then I got word the Nazis had arrested him. They sent him to a concentration camp, to Belsen. I tried to get back to him, and then Singapore fell. The Japanese took me to a detention camp. For 3.5 years, Eric and I have had no word from each other. Don't you see? I want him to know that I'm coming home, that I'm alive.
You are alive, Mrs. Bruner. But your husband?
Even Belsen could not kill my husband, Captain.
I wish I had your confidence, madam.
He is alive.
And if he is?
Then I'm sure he's gone to Israel. Just before we said goodbye the last time, Eric and I made plans to go to Israel. We wanted to live and work there. Captain, let me send my message. Let the Red Cross find Eric so he can be waiting for me at Point Said.
Mr. Bornison, you'll follow your instructions. Radio silence not to be broken.
Yes, sir.
Captain Ando.
Madam, you believe in miracles. I do not.
I see. Good night, gentlemen.
I told myself that only fools or saints could have such faith. What could I believe about my own wife, my own son? For almost 5 years, the enemy had occupied Norway. After 5 years, what was I going home to? On our third day out, one of the passengers, Mrs. Rowley, invited everyone to what she gaily called a tea party in the passengers' lounge.
Well, everybody seems to be here. Except, of course, Mrs. Bruner and Mr. Maxwell. But that's to be expected, isn't it?
In what way, Mrs. Rowley?
Oh, now, really, Captain. You must have noticed our shipboard romance.
Mrs. Bruner has a husband, Mrs. Rowley, or at least she thinks she has.
Oh, did you hear that, everybody? Oh, Captain, you're simply delightful.
After that, I began to watch, since they were together a great deal. Walking the deck, playing cards, always together. On the fourth night out, I had trouble sleeping. I left my cabin and went to the lounge for a magazine. As I started to enter, I heard music coming from the shortwave radio and voices.
How do you know that's the Vienna station? We haven't heard an announcement.
It's Vienna. I remember the wavelength.
Sometimes I think you remember too much.
Oh, happiness should be remembered. My first solo with the ballet. Eric's first big concert. The night he played Chopin with the Vienna Philharmonic. Those are the lasting things, Tony.
Yeah, until a war comes along and destroys everything.
I wish you could have seen our home, Tony. Our garden went right down to the bank of the Danube. There were rose bushes and lilacs and a little pool filled with water lilies.
You can have another garden, Pam. Bigger and better, anything you want. I told you when I hit New York, there's over 3 years back pay waiting for me.
Eric used to play this waltz. It was one of his encore numbers.
Oh, Pam, don't keep shutting me out. I can give you a good home, a fine home.
Tony, I'm already married. I've got a husband.
But you don't know it.
I do. Eric is alive. I know it.
I hope he is, Pam, if he means that much to you. But suppose you do find him. You've got to be prepared. Don't expect things to be just as they always were.
Don't expect...
Oh, years have gone by. Things are bound to be different.
You're saying that Eric may not still love me, is that it?
Pam, I don't want to be cruel, but...
You're telling me that Eric may not want to see me again. That Belsen has destroyed him.
Eric's had to live his own life for a long while, Pam. A life you've had no part of.
This is your musical digest broadcast from the Armed Forces radio station in Rome, Italy.
Rome? Oh, no. No, it's Vienna.
That's what I mean, Pam. You can't go back and pick up life as it was. The world has changed. Vienna, your home, your garden, your husband, everything's different now.
Turn it off, Tony. Turn it off.
Oh, Pam, listen. Take what you're already sure of. You know that I love you. It's not something you've got to find out when we reach Port Said. It exists here now. The life I can give you, it's real. Take it, Pam. Take it.
Please, Tony. Please. You've got to give me this time.
The sixth day out of Cochin, the Nordsfjord entered the currents of the Gulf of Aden. At sunset, the seventh day, we sighted the brown bluffs of Saudi Arabia. By dawn, we were steaming northwest through the Red Sea. I was going up to the bridge as the radio officer dashed out of the wireless room.
Captain, sir, I want you to hear something.
Something wrong, Mr. Vornison?
Quick, sir.
It is further reported that the Emperor of Japan will make a special broadcast to his people, announcing the complete and unconditional surrender.
It is peace,
all
sir.
Peace.
Mr. Orlick, sound for boat drill immediately. Start the siren. Assemble all hands on the foredeck.
Passengers and crew listened to me in a kind of stunned silence. And then all at once, the realization came. Peace, at last. The ship's carpenter brought out an old crank phonograph. The two Dutch passengers did a polka on the forward hatch. The three Frenchmen led the deckhands in the final chorus of the Marseillaise. The English passengers replied that God save the king. The ship's cook found two bottles of champagne, which he brought to the lounge. Passengers and officers raised their glasses to each other.
All right, everybody. The toast to peace, to a better world and a new life for all of us.
To peace!
Well.
It's hard to believe, isn't it, Captain?
Yes.
Well, come on, drink up, everybody. Let's not let the party die. Mrs. Raleigh, you told us you used to be in vaudeville. How about a song? Mrs. Raleigh.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was just wondering if my son and daughter have heard the news yet. They live in Coventry, you know. Or at least they did before the Blitz.
Oh, yeah, sure. Hey, Pam, you got a pretty good voice, haven't you?
Not now, Tony.
Well, look, what's the matter with everybody? One minute we're laughing and singing, it's the biggest day of our lives, and now, well, what's wrong? What is it?
I think he knew, but no one had the courage to put it into words. After so many years of war, peace itself was frightening. We were going back to lives and homes and people that could no longer defend themselves with the excuse there's a war going on. What were they going to find? Then, what was I going to find? For 2 days, we steamed through the Red Sea. During that time, Maxwell and Mrs. Brunner were always together, by her choice or his insistence. Mr. Bornison.
Yes, sir?
Take this message to the director of canal traffic. Our position is 36 degrees, 12 minutes east, 26 degrees, 1 minute north. Estimated approach to Suez Canal, 1,700 hours tomorrow.
1,700 hours, yes, sir.
And we await his confirmation and instructions as to the pilot.
Yes, sir. I get it off right away.
Captain Arndell.
Yes, Miss Brunner?
I'd like your permission to talk by radio telephone to the International Red Cross.
In Israel?
Yes. I want to know if my message from Cochin got through to them.
I doubt it. Radio silence still applies to personal messages. You're on the ship.
But the war is over.
Technically, yes.
Captain, I'm sorry if I seem unreasonable, but my whole future life depends on finding my husband.
You are assuming, of course, that he's alive.
He has to be.
Mrs. Brunner, you are not the only passenger who has asked to use our wireless. We cannot accommodate anyone until our orders change.
I see. Very well.
And Mrs. Brunner.
Yes?
If your husband is not waiting for you at Port Said, will you stay aboard and finish out the voyage with us?
I'll decide that when we reach Port Said. Good night, Captain.
8 the following afternoon, we passed Port Tawfiq and entered the Suez Canal. The passengers crowded the railings and stared at the desert of Arabia on our starboard and the shores of Africa on our port. At dinner, there was a peculiar tension in the air. Everyone was talking, and yet the talk had an unreal quality. People joked about what they would find at home. One of the Dutchmen hoped the Nazis had bombed out his factory so he could retire. And Dubois, the youngest of the Frenchmen, predicted that his wife was now a bigamist. Everyone pretended amusement, except Mrs. Brunner. Suddenly, she got to her feet and looked around the table.
It's all very funny, isn't it? Laugh. Make jokes about everything that matters to you. Because you're afraid to believe there's still good in the world.
Pam, hold on.
I've seen it growing day by day. And now you're all simply terrified to hope. Then why bother to get on the ship? Why go home if it's to nothing?
Mrs. Brunner, I suggest that you sit down, please.
Why? Do I make everyone ashamed? Am I the only one who has faith in life? I know what you're all thinking. She lives in a dream. Tomorrow there'll be no one waiting for her at Port Said. Her husband is dead. And if he's alive, he's found some other woman.
Pam, stop it.
You want Eric to be your proof that nothing lasts in life. Eric is alive. He'll be waiting for me. He will.
At midnight, we passed Ismailia, the halfway point of the canal. It was impossible to sleep. The combined heat of Africa and Arabia seemed to press down on the ship like an invisible force. At dawn, I dressed and went back to the bridge. Mr. Bournisson was waiting for me.
Sir, radio silence has been broken.
What? Officially?
Yes, sir. I was just listening to Cairo talking to Bombay. They were transmitting personal messages.
I wonder how long.
I asked Port Said, sir. They said controls were lifted 3 days ago.
3 days?
Shall I tell the passengers, sir? They've all got messages.
I'll announce it at breakfast.
Very good, sir.
Mr. Bournisson?
Yes, sir.
There's one passenger you might tell right now. She's down there on the foredeck. The sun was only a red hint on the horizon, and yet she was down there waiting. She wore a dress I'd never seen before, something white and feminine. Her very best, I imagine. The minarets of Port Said appeared off the bow. Maxwell joined Mrs. Brunner at the railing, and then by twos and threes, the rest of the passengers. Everyone was waiting, wondering. This lone woman had become a symbol for all of us. The landings and warehouses swung into view. Down channel, the customs launch put out and headed for us. I heard a voice behind me.
Captain, may I come onto the bridge?
If you wish, certainly.
May I borrow your binoculars?
Stalling at last.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Where will we go ashore, Captain?
Dead ahead, the wharf with the yellow warehouse. Mr. Orlick, reduce the quarter speed.
Reduce the quarter speed, yes, sir.
I could make out a group of men standing on the wharf. Mrs. Brunner trained the glasses on first one, then another.
See anything, Pam?
It was Maxwell. His face was set, tense. In a half circle behind him were the rest of the passengers, waiting silently, watching the woman with the glasses. On the foredeck below, the crew stared up at the bridge, waiting. Their own hope for the future somehow in the balance as they watched this slim girl.
You see him, Pam.
Stop engines. Lower ladder for a customs launch.
Stop engines. Lower ladder. Yes, sir.
Pam, do you?
No.
Are you sure, dear? Yes. Well, perhaps... perhaps he just couldn't get here in time.
I thought that if I believed strongly enough...
it would have taken a miracle, Mrs. Brunner.
And they don't happen, do they? All right, Tony. We can go.
The passengers turned away. Their faces were suddenly tired, hopeless.
Captain, the customs launch is signaling us.
Stand by to take them aboard.
Yes, sir. There's a man on the boat waving, sir.
A man? Give me the glasses.
She fumbled and almost dropped them. She focused, then put the glasses down and wiped her eyes. Then she focused again. Everyone stood frozen. Maxwell, the mate, the helmsman, the passengers, the crew.
Eric! Eric! Eric!
Mrs. Brunner and her husband went ashore in the customs launch. The officers, the deckhands, the passengers, even Maxwell, stood at the railing and waved them out of sight, their faces smiling. Mr. Bonesson?
Yes, sir?
Do you think you can contact Oslo for me?
Oslo, sir? Yes, sir, I'll try.
I'd like to send a personal message.
Yes, sir.
To Mrs. Rudolph Arndal, Oslo, Norway.
Your wife, sir?
My wife, Mr. Bonesson. Tell her I'm on my way home.
It has been a long time, sir.
Yes, Mr. Bonesson. It's been a long way home.
Romance is produced and directed by Fred Mackay. Editorial supervision is by Het Mannheim. You have heard The Long Way Home, written especially for Romance by Leonard St. Clair. Ellen Morgan was heard as Pamela, with Hans Conried as Captain Arndal, Robert Bailey as Maxwell. Featured in the cast were Eleanor Audley, Howard McNear, Byron Kane, and Parley Bear. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to hear Romance, transcribed next week and every Saturday morning at the same time. Tired of it all? Whatever it all happens to be, we promise you complete relief, a complete change on the CBS radio program called Escape. Escape brings you off-the-trail dramatic stories set in places that are strange and different. It's Escape, tonight on most of these stations. Stay tuned for Stars Over Hollywood, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. You hear America's favorite shows on the CBS radio network.
Romance, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 24, 1954 on CBS, featuring an acting cast that was among only about 90 at that point in radio's history that were making at least a steady paycheck as a radio actor, like Hans Conried, famous character actor of many programs, Bob Bailey, who in the following year would become yours truly Johnny Dollar, and CBS radio regulars Howard McNear, who played Doc on Gunsmoke, and Parley Bear, who on the same series played Deputy Chester Proudfoot. You're listening to An Hour of Romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. And now more members of the Gunsmoke cast appear next in Rogers of the Gazette, including Georgia Ellis, who played Kitty, series regular John Daner, the show even directed by Gunsmoke director Norman McDonald, and even the man who penned the theme for Gunsmoke, Rex Corey, also composed the score of this next broadcast starring Will Rogers Jr. from October 15th, 1953 on CBS.
Ladies and gentlemen, the editor of the Illyria Weekly Gazette, Mr. Will Rogers, Jr.
Thank you. I guess I'm about the last person in the world who should give out advice on affairs of the heart. But I had this random thought for teenagers the other day, and I figured I'd pass it along. While you're still young enough to play, stick with tennis, where love means nothing.
Rogers of the Gazette. Another story of a country newspaper and its friendly editor, starring Will Rogers, Jr. Brought to you tonight, transcribed by Plymouth, with an invitation to see the new 54 high-style Plymouth tomorrow.
It's big, the 54 Plymouth, it's bright. The 54 Plymouth, big, bright, beautiful too. The 54 Plymouth is a car for you.
Thank you.
doctor, I guess I know most of the people in Elyria. As a matter of fact, half the town's been to my office one time or another these past few days. People seem to get the sniffles even during Indian summer. I've got them, too. I just wish Will's ailment was something as simple as the sniffles. You see, I know that Maggie Button's in love with Will. He doesn't. I know that Barbara Lord's in love with Will. He doesn't. I even know that Barbara's on her way back to Elyria after a summer in Europe. Will doesn't know that. Nope. My friend Will still thinks 2 and 1 is 3, but I think 2 and 1 is trouble. That's Maggie there, hurrying over toward the Gazette office.
Will, she's coming home. Isn't that wonderful she's coming home this week?
Is she?
After all this time, 2 months. Or is it 3 months?
I don't know. I don't even know who's coming home.
Barbara, silly.
Barbara Lord?
Well, of course, Barbara Lord. Oh, imagine. All the places she's seen the last few months. Paris, Rome, Naples, then Switzerland, the Low Countries, London, and back to Elyria.
Paris in the spring, Elyria in the fall. Guess you could do worse than that, Maggie.
You sure can. Elyria in the spring, Elyria in the fall.
Just the same, I'll bet she'll be glad to get home.
She says she will be. Claims she wouldn't miss the official opening of Elyria's autumn season for anything in the world.
Official opening? What's that?
The Bixby's party, Sunday.
Oh, that.
You do know about the party, then?
How can you miss knowing about it? Belle and Addie Bixby invite the whole town, don't they?
Only the cream of Elyrian society.
They invite the whole blame town.
You were invited, then?
Sure. Weren't you?
Yeah, I was invited. I just didn't know for sure about you. You hadn't said anything about it.
Oh, what's there to say?
Oh, nothing.
Well, say, now we're on the subject of the party, Maggie.
Yes, sure.
Well, I think you ought to arrange to get there early, you know, so you can get a good look at all the women when they parade in their spanking new dresses. I think we ought to do one of those who was glimpse looking smart in what columns in next week's paper.
Uh-huh. You think I ought to arrange to get there early?
Well, unless you have other plans.
No. No, I have no other plans. I have no plans at all about the Bixby party.
Well, now that's good. Then you can run over early and cover the style show.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, now it might be at that. Remember last year when Emory Adams loaded the punch? Even Addie Bixby was walking off her hands before the night was over.
Well, I didn't see much of the festivities last year. I went early and made notes all evening on what the women were wearing.
Oh.
You can have dessert if you like, Will. I like to see a young fella take to his food.
Thanks, Doc. Well, I took to the roast beef dinner so much, I don't think I've got room for dessert.
Well, I can't go it myself, to tell the truth. Have you got enough coffee?
Plenty, thanks.
I'm so stuffed up now, a little smoke won't bother me any. Will you have a cigar?
No. Now, Doc, will you come to the point right soon so I can relax a little?
Why, what's the matter, boy?
Well, I don't know yet, but you've been building up to something ever since you said you'd buy my dinner tonight. Now, what is it?
Well, I like that. A man makes a friendly little gesture, invites a friend to dinner, and right off, he's suspect.
Especially if the man is you. Now, come on, Doc. What's it all about?
A lonely old man, weary of eating alone night after night, doesn't want to force himself on people often. But occasionally, feeling the need of companionship, he innocently asks.
Now, will you stop? Stop. You haven't eaten a meal alone in the last 10 years. No one in town gets more dinner invitations than you do.
Understandable. I really have a lot of charm when you get to know me.
I know you. So how come you're buying me this dinner?
Well, as a matter of fact, son, I'm going to stick my nose right smack dab in the middle of your business, and I figured you'd take to it better on a full stomach.
I sure admire honesty, even when I have to drag it out of a man.
Well, the plain fact is, Will, I ran into Myron Lord in the post office this afternoon, and he tells me Barbara will be home before the week's out.
Yeah. Maggie got a letter from Barbara this morning. Said she hoped to get back in time for the Bixby party Sunday.
What are you going to do about it?
Oh, I think I'll go to the party, all right.
Oh, no, no. I mean, what are you going to do about Barbara and about Maggie?
Do about them?
Exactly that. Do about them. Before Barbara left, you'd take her out one night and turn right around and take Maggie someplace the next night.
Oh, what's wrong with that?
Well, for one thing, they're best friends, Maggie and Barbara. And for another, you've been doing this for the last year or so. First with Maggie, then with Barbara. Don't you think it's time you made a move one way or the other?
I'm not inclined to make a move one way or the other. If that's got anything to do with it. Are you trying to say that I should make some kind of choice between Maggie and Barbara?
Well, shouldn't you? After all, they're both in love with you, and I don't think it's exactly fair to either of them.
Now, just hold a minute. This business of them being in love with me, I don't see that, Doc.
Well, I don't see it myself. But they are. I know blame well they are.
Now, Doc.
I'm serious, Will. I don't think there's the slightest doubt in either of their minds about it. The remarkable thing to me is that it hasn't affected their friendship for each other. But it could, Will, if you don't do something about it.
Well, now, Doc, to be honest, I never thought about doing anything about it. Never thought that far ahead. I mean, well, they're wonderful girls, both of them. And I'm really very fond of them. In different ways, of course. I don't honestly think I love either one of them. Anyway, I'm pretty sure I'm not in love with either of them. A fella'd know if he was in love. Wouldn't he?
Well, I ought to know. Yeah!
Bless you.
Excuse me.
Now, look, Doc. I like both of them. Like them a lot. And I don't want to hurt either of them. But I'm sure not ready to make any kind of a choice between them.
You think it's got something to do with Ann, Will?
I guess it does.
Ann would never want you to be lonely, Will.
I know she wouldn't, Doc. But with Ann, I knew I was in love with her. I knew I wanted to be married to her. And it was a good marriage, Doc. A real good marriage.
Yeah. I know that, Will.
I don't say I'll never marry again. Maybe I will. But right now, well, I'm just not sure enough, Doc. I'd want to be pretty sure. For the girl, whoever she is. For me, of course. And for Jill.
You've thought about what's best for Jill, then?
A lot. Little girls growing up need a mother. I know that. If she can't have her own, well, her dad had better find her a pretty good substitute.
Will, can you forgive a nosy old man?
I can forgive any nosy old man if he buys my dinner. Well, now that you've talked my leg off, this is going to cost you the biggest piece of pie in the cafe.
Oh, spare me no mercy.
And a 2-bit cigar.
Hey!
Daddy, don't you think it's time for a break?
You say something, Jill?
I said, don't you think it's time for a break?
I guess so. There's just that one more patch to do over there in the middle.
Mrs. Weatherwax made some lemonade. Look, I brought it out to you.
Good girl.
We have cookies, too.
Hey, how about that? Say, where'll we have our tea party, huh?
Oh, over under the maple tree, maybe. Or back by the mulberry bushes.
Well, now, I don't know.
We can have it right here. And you can lie down in the hammock like you always do.
Now, that's a real good idea.
We have fun, don't we, Daddy?
Uh-huh. I think we do, Jill.
Here.
Thanks, honey.
You're welcome. I like to take care of you. Do you like to take care of me?
I sure do, honey. I like it fine.
That's nice. This is good, isn't it?
Wait a minute. It is good. Just hits the spot.
Daddy? Why didn't you tell me Barbara Lord was coming home?
Just found out myself yesterday.
I didn't find out till today. Mrs. Weatherwax heard it uptown.
Well, she heard right, honey. I guess Barbara will be home today or tomorrow. Anyway, before Sunday.
Have a cookie?
Thanks.
You're welcome. Do you like her, Daddy?
Barbara? Yeah, I like her. Do you?
Oh, sure do.
I can't hear through the cookies.
I said I sure do like her. I guess Barbara Lord's my most favorite lady in the whole world.
Really, honey?
Next to Maggie, of course, and Mrs. Weatherwax.
Oh, yeah, I see. All three of them are your most favorite ladies in the whole world.
Next to Miss Barker. She's my teacher. I guess I've got more best friends than anyone. I like best friends, don't you, Daddy?
Best friends are wonderful, honey.
Gee, Wouldn't it be awful to have just one best friend? I mean, if you had to make a choice.
Yes, honey. If you had to make a choice, I think maybe it would be awful. Morning, Maggie.
Oh, hello, Will. I thought you said you'd be late this morning. Aren't you due at that Farm Bureau meeting?
Yeah, but I forgot that report from the State Agricultural Society that came in yesterday. I'll need it at the meeting.
Aren't you going to get a haircut?
Here it is. Haircut? Why, didn't I get a haircut last week?
The last time you got a haircut was... Wait a minute now. 3 weeks ago yesterday.
You wrote it down?
And put a red circle around it. It meant that much to me. I'm the one who has to look at it most of the time.
Yeah, I guess you are at that.
You're all scraggly around the neck. And if you're going to look nice at the party...
I'll get a haircut, Maggie. Today. Now, that's a promise.
Then you are planning to go to the Bixby party?
Oh, I guess I'll go all right.
Well, then... Oh, go get a haircut.
I said I would, Maggie.
Look who's here. Barbara!
Well, I'll be doggone.
Oh, Maggie, how wonderful to see
you. Welcome home, sweetie. And look at you. You look great.
Hello, Will.
Hello, Barbara.
What are you doing? Letting your hair grow?
Not anymore. I've had complaints.
You look wonderful, Will.
You look real nice yourself, Barbara. Well, I got to get along now.
Will, I just got here.
I know, but there's this Farm Bureau meeting, and I'm late for it now. It sure is. Well, it's good to see you. I want to hear about that trip. See you both later, huh?
How about him?
Here, here.
I wonder, Maggie. I flew 5,000 miles to see that guy again. You greet me with a warm embrace. He shakes my hand. Maggie, are we going to go through life like that?
You are listening to Rogers of the Gazette, starring Mr. Will Rogers, Jr.
Tomorrow, enter Plymouth's $25,000 contest. Tomorrow, see the great new 54 Plymouth.
It's big, bright, beautiful.
And now we continue with the second act of tonight's show.
Already ordered the coffee. Good.
Oh, your hair looks wonderful.
Thanks. Only 40 minutes under the dryer takes a lot out of me. And for what? I keep asking myself.
He hasn't asked you to the party yet?
He hasn't even come close.
Well, for whatever small comfort it is, he hasn't asked me either. Maggie, what are we going to do about that guy?
I don't know. Set fire to him.
Burning's too good for him. You didn't happen to get tired of him this summer by any chance?
You don't know how I tried to. I'm afraid not, Barbara. Even the way he doesn't get haircuts appeals to me.
I know. Oh, I know.
I guess the trip didn't work any wonders for you then, huh?
Maggie, I was positively shameless. On plane, train, and the Champs-Élysées, I tried every known means to forget him. I don't know how many wonderfully attractive men, exciting, interesting, stunning men. And I'd wind up telling them about Will.
I don't know who I feel sorriest for, you or me. The big lug doesn't deserve either one of us.
Of course he doesn't. And don't you wish that were comforting?
I wish something were. Believe me, I've tried everything. I play out whole fantasies with myself. At breakfast in the morning, for instance, I imagine that I'll go to the office looking cool and aloof, and that all this will hurt him terribly, and he'll beg me for just one small smile. And what happens? I go to the office looking cool and aloof, and He walks in and says, "Hi, Maggie," and I'm dead.
I wish I didn't understand you so well.
You don't know how I prayed that he'd barge in the office one day and tell me he was following you to Europe.
We must have canceled each other. I hoped and prayed I'd come back to find that he'd married you.
I wish he had. I'd invite you to dinner every Sunday, and I'd insist that we take you with us to the Bixby party Sunday.
I'd fool you, too. I'd accept both invitations.
Oh, can't you just see the three of us going through life together?
Mm-hmm. What a couple we'll make.
Well, like the song says, it seems we've sat and talked like this before. I don't know about you, but I'm going to do something about it.
What?
Anything I can think of to get him to take me to the Bixby party.
Okay, so am I. Fair means or foul, anything goes. Okay?
Texas rules, friend. And may the better participant emerge victorious.
It's like Christmas, Barbara, or maybe my birthday. Oh, it's nicer because it isn't any special day at all.
Well, now, take it easy, Jill. There might be something breakable.
Oh, she's doing fine, Will. Fun to get excited about surprises.
Oh, look. A doll. A lot of dolls.
One from every country I visited. That's the Dutch doll. See, with her little wooden shoes and the little bonnet. And there's one from France and Italy and Switzerland. Well, they're all in there somewhere. With a little book that tells about each country.
Aren't they nice, Jill?
Oh, Barbara. Barbara, thank you so much.
Oh, you're quite welcome, honey. I hope you'll enjoy them.
Oh, I will. I truly will. Can I... Daddy, would it be all right if I kissed her?
Well, I think maybe it would.
Oh, take my word for it. It'd be perfectly all right.
Thank you, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, darling.
You're my most favorite lady in the whole world.
Bless your heart.
Can I show them to Mrs. Weatherwax?
Oh, of course you can.
Oh, golly. Mrs. Weatherwax? Mrs. Weatherwax, look what I've got.
Now she'll name them all Barbara. And by the time she adds them to her good night list, it'll take twice as long to get her to bed.
Can you ever forgive me?
You were nice to think of her. Now she's got, let me see. She's got three dolls named Maggie, two named Mrs. Weatherwax, one named Doc, a bear named John, and a sheepdog named Daddy.
When are you going to get a haircut?
This afternoon. Doc and I are going together, figuring maybe Sam will give us a cut rate.
Maybe he will.
Well, how was the trip, Barbara? You got any high-level impressions of Europe that I can break exclusively in the Gazette?
Oh, I kept a diary, and almost all of it is printable, unfortunately. But I got some wonderful color movies. That is, I hope they're wonderful. And when I get them back, I'm going to force them on all my friends.
I've got some I took at Jill's first steps. We could run them together as a double bill.
Wonderful idea.
Best way I know to alienate people, home movies. Oh, not that your pictures would drive folks away.
Well, if they drove a few away, I wouldn't mind. I could be persuaded to have a private showing. Just for you.
Well, I'd like that. I mean, I'd sure like to see the pictures, I mean.
I know what you mean.
Well, but it seems dull here in Elyria after touring all over Europe, don't it?
Oh, no, not dull at all. Why, I can't imagine anything more exciting than the Bixby party on Sunday.
Well, I don't know about it being exciting, but the whole town will be there.
I expect so. Oh, will you be there?
Oh, I guess so.
That'll be nice.
Say, have you got any special plans for the party, Barbara?
Well, not a plan in the world, Will.
Well, now, that's good, because I just happened to think, only... Well, maybe it's a little late to ask.
Well, just you ask and see if it's too late.
Well, as long as you haven't made any plans, why don't you go early and help Maggie make notes on what the ladies are wearing, would you? Now, take it easy, Sam. Save some for next time.
Let's see. Next time figures to be around Thanksgiving. You can grow a full head of hair by then.
Yeah. Well, easy does it just the same.
Suppose you're getting shorn for the Bixby girls' party? Everyone else is?
Not exactly. I'm getting this haircut more or less by popular request.
Don't dull your scissors on him, Sam. There are better heads to cut.
And thicker.
Sit down, Doc. Wait your turn. I gotta do that when I come to your shop.
Oh, yeah.
What's the matter? Been taking some of your own pills?
Very funny. Very, very funny. You know something? All the warm, friendly spirit gone out of this town. I haven't heard a civil word this live long day.
Well, I lay it to the Bixby girls. The whole town gets fitful just for one of their shebangs.
Oh, now that's just plain ridiculous.
I'm not so sure it is, Doc. Seems to me like I've heard more talk and harangue about the party this year than ever before. Maggie's all keyed up, and Barbara's nervous as a cat about it. I bet they've checked me half a dozen times to see if I'm going.
Well, are you?
I'll tell you this. I've got half a mind not to. Sam tells me the fish are biting again up Snake Creek, and I'm darned if I wouldn't rather go fishing.
Bill and Addie Bixby'd never forgive you if you didn't show up. Personally, I'm looking forward to it. Which one you taking, Will?
What do you mean?
I mean, which one are you taking? Maggie or Barbara?
I haven't asked either one of them.
Will Rogers!
Ouch!
Doggone you, Doc. How'd you like me shouting around at one of your tonsillectomies? I fair snapped his ear off.
Well, you can cut his throat for all of me. Will, call me a nosy old man again if you want to, but it appears to me you ought to take one or the other. I just don't think it's fair for you to sit back stubborn-like and leave them both high and dry.
Now, Doc, you're taking on too much. You might as well save your breath, because no one's near as interested in me and the Bixby party as you make out. Honest, Doc, a fella just can't count himself that important.
Awfully glad you called me to come down, Maggie. As a matter of fact, I was just getting ready to call you.
Oh, isn't that a coincidence?
What keeps you at the office today, anyway? You don't usually work on Saturdays, do you?
Oh, it depends. There's the mail and a few little things to do. Always. Barbara?
Huh?
Barbara, I'm going to the Bixby party with Will. He called me this morning.
He called you this morning?
Uh-huh. And I couldn't tell you on your phone. I just had to see you face to face.
What time this morning?
Oh, around 9, I think. Maybe a little later.
Maggie, he called me this morning around 9, maybe a little later. He asked me to go to the Bixby party with him.
Oh, no! Not even Will would do that.
He did it.
You know, we may have to set fire to him after all.
And here I was feeling a little sorry for you.
I was all choked up about you myself. You know something? It won't work. It just won't work.
3's been a crowd for a long time.
Why couldn't one of us have a little pride? After all, it is the day before the party. It's too darn late to call a girl and expect to get a date.
Of course it is. So our boy called 2 girls and got 2 dates.
Well, I'm not going to let him get away with it. I'm going to call him right now and tell him you can't make it.
Oh, I've pulled phone cords out of the wall for less than that. No, I'll call
but
him.
But Barbara...
And tell him you can't make it.
You've been to Europe. What would a couple of French girls do in a situation
Maggie,
like this?
Maggie, dear, when we're both older and wiser, I'll tell you. In the first place, they...
Well, hi there.
On top of everything else, he's a point killer.
We were just talking about you.
You were? Well, now that's funny, because I was just thinking about the 2 of you.
Will... Maybe we 3 should sit down and have a little talk.
All right. Shoot.
Don't press your luck, Will.
I'll bet you think I've done something you don't like.
It's about threesomes, Will. They're... Well, you did get a haircut after all.
Stick to your guns, Barbara.
Oh, yes. Well, 3 people, Will. They're 1 too many.
And we just don't think a threesome is a solution for the party tomorrow night. It's a nice haircut, too.
Thanks. Well, now, all this talk about a threesome. My golly, don't you think I've got more sense than to take 2 girls to the same party?
No.
Well, I have. It's not going to be a threesome at all. It's a regular foursome. Jill's coming along, too.
Remember, you have a date this weekend to see the new 1954 high-style Plymouth.
big, bright, and beautiful.
Heard Rogers of the Gazette, starring Mr. Will Rogers, Jr., with Georgia Ellis as Maggie Button. Tonight's story was written by Kathleen Hyatt and produced and transcribed by Norman MacDonald. Featured in the cast were Parley Bear, Joyce McCluskey, Mary McGovern, and John Daner. The special music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Rogers of the Gazette was brought to you by Plymouth, with a reminder to see the new 1954 Plymouth this weekend. And to mail your entry in the big Plymouth contest before Monday midnight. Roy Rowan speaking over the CBS Radio Network.
Rogers of the Gazette, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 15th, 1953 on CBS. And that ends this hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. It's been a pleasure.